And with that said, I'd like to introduce the new director of the National Computer Security Center, Larry Martin. And Larry is going to introduce the first keynote speaker of the day, Brian Snow. Thank you.
Good morning. Before I introduce our first keynote speaker this morning, I'd like to put in a plug for the 23rd National Information System Security Conference that the National Computer Security Center co-sponsors with the with NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology. This year's conference will be in the Baltimore Convention Center. We're moving back there after 2 years down in Crystal City. And it'll be October 16th to the 19th. This year's program includes David Farber, who is the Chief Technology Officer at the Federal Communications Commission, the Director of the National Security Agency, and we've invited the Attorney General, Janet Reno, and we're waiting for her reply. Okay. Brian Snow is the Senior Technical Director at the National Security Agency. In his almost 30-year career, he has created U.S. government cryptographic systems that are in use today. He has broken non-U.S. cryptologic systems. He's directed research in secure systems design, and he's found several system vulnerabilities. He characterizes his current job as follows. Technical directors should find the right things to do, while managers should do the right things. Please welcome Brian Snow.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. I'd like to make things very easy for some of the DEF CON people who are arriving early. I'm the Fed. Okay. Unfortunately, I will not be at DEF CON, so I'll be there virtually. You have to tag me in virtual space. I would like to start this with a bit of entertainment for you. How many of you attended the RSA 1999 conference in January 1999? Few hands? Most did not. Good. I have the permission of Jim Bidzos, the CEO of RSA Data Security Incorporated, to show you a short video clip. I can use it for training purposes in exercises like this. It characterizes the state of the security market today. I think it's a very accurate characterization. Unfortunately, I do not have derivative rights of distribution. I can only use it in a primary sense. So I have to ask that the Black Hat recorders go off, and then we'll turn on a video for about a 4-minute entertainment kick for you. We'll pretend this is a big fancy conference. Again, my thanks to Jim Bidzos of RSA. He was very gracious in allowing the use of that clip. Okay? Now we'll see if we can get back to the, oh my goodness, very good. The slide views are up over here. If you'd like to follow along and make notes on the slides, this presentation is in your book in the White Hat section, the second presentation from the last. So go to the White Hat section, if you care, and go backwards from the back, and you'll find this presentation second from the back. Okay, I'm from the National Security Agency, and let's see if I can say this right. I'm here to help you. Thank goodness, that used to get a much bigger laugh. I'm glad that it dies down over time. Candidly, it's true. We are trying to be more of a help to the commercial sector these days than we have been in the past. But nevertheless, for today, I'd like to turn it around and state, I'm from the National Security Agency, and I am here to ask for your help. And that is a correct characterization as well. NSA has a proud tradition during the past 48 years of providing cryptographic hardware and embedded systems to our customers. Up to a few years ago, we were a sole source provider. In recent years, there has come to be a commercial security market, you, that is attractive to our customers, and we are in the unaccustomed position of having to compete. There is nothing wrong with that, and indeed, if my customers' needs can be met better elsewhere, so be it. Many of my customers are still required by policy and regulation to accept NSA advice on security products, but they really stress us to recommend commercial solutions for cost savings and other reasons. Where we can, we do so, but we don't do it very often. Why not? Because I still haven't found what I'm looking for, assurance. Assurance is essential to security products, and it is missing in most commercial offerings today. I'd like to draw a parallel between the commercial security market of today and the automobile industry of 1930. If you look at cars built in the 1930s, they're attractive, beautiful roadsters. They could go 60 miles an hour. They would get you from here to there, and people were very pleased with them. A nice roadster would be open like a convertible, no doors to the side, sit down in that sucker and go. It was performant. It did the job. But if it encountered an unexpected circumstance, like a road skid or an incompetent driver heading for a tree, at 60 miles an hour, you would crash and you would die. Compare that with the automobile industry of the year 2000. The cars are attractive. They look very nice. They can go 60 miles an hour or faster. They will get you from here to there, and people like them. But if you find an unexpected circumstance, if things get tight and you're skidding down the road heading toward a tree, you have a very good chance of walking away from it. Why? They have airbags, seat belts, ABS brakes, traction control, crumple zones in the metal for when the contact actually is made, and many other protection features. Go to any major car manufacturer's site, go to their safety page, they have one, and they list hundreds of features like that to protect you in the case of misuse of the automobile. That is assurance. Your industry is parallel to the industry of the 1930s. You perform well in expected environments, but when unexpected things happen, in particular malice, products often crumple, fail, and cause damage to the user. I want you to grow up and become like the auto industry in the year 2000. It is necessary. It is time. Okay? What does assurance constitute? I'll give a more precise definition later, but for now it suffices to say that assurance work makes a user or an accreditor more confident that the system works as intended without flaws or surprises, even in the presence of malice. The system is analyzed at design time for potential problems, which are then corrected. We test devices to see how they perform when stressed or used in ways beyond the normal specification. I want functions and assurances in a security device. We do not beta test on the customer. If my product fails, someone might die. Functions are typically visible to the user and commanded through an interface. Assurances tend to be invisible to the user, but keep him safe anyway. Examples would be thicker insulation on a power wire to reduce the risk of shock, and failure analysis to show that no single transistor failure will result in a security compromise. To quote a bit from Clinton, you can take a political expression, the real need in the industry today is assurance. My job today is to sensitize you to assurance issues and to cause you to address them during the design and engineering of hardware security systems and not as aftermarket studies done for workshops, etc. I need to focus on assurance because if we were asked to predict the state of security 20 years from now, I would focus not on new things, but on the absence of assurance, rather than the existence of new and wonderful things. 20 years from now, there will still be security-enhanced software applications vulnerable to buffer overflow problems. These products should not be called secure, but they will be sold as such the way they are today. 20 years from now, there will still be security-enhanced operating systems that will crash when applications misbehave. They will not be secure either. If my car crashed as often as my operating system, I'd be dead by now. 20 years from now, we will have sufficient functionality, plenty of performance, but not enough assurance. Otherwise, predicting 20 years out is simply too hard in this industry, so I'll limit myself to 20 net years, or about 5 years real time. Throughout the coming 5-year span, I see little improvement in assurance, hence little true security offered by the industry. Am I depressed? Yes, I am. The scene I see is products and services sufficiently robust to counter many but not all of the hacker attacks we hear so much about today, but not adequate against the more serious but real attacks mounted by economic enemies and nation states. We will be in a truly dangerous stance. We will think we are secure and we'll act accordingly when in fact we are not secure. Clearly, we need assurance in security products. I hope we don't need a major bank failure or other disaster as a wake-up call before we act. Some of the best advertising we get asked for in regard to the need for assurance today is provided by the low-level hackers and script kiddies who are breaking systems and either brag about it or are dumb enough to get caught. They demonstrate that assurance techniques barely adequate for a benign environment simply will not hold up in a malicious environment. And we have to design to defeat malice. Believe me, there is malice out there beyond what the script kiddies can mount. During the next several years, we need major pushes and advances in three areas: scalability, interoperability, and assurance. I believe the market will provide the first two, but not the last one, assurance. There may or may not be major breakthroughs in new security functions. But I don't think we really need many new functions, new primitives. If they come, we will use them. That's nice. If they don't, we can make do with what we have. What we really need, but are not likely to get, is greater levels of assurance. That is sad because despite the real need in assurance technology, we fail to fully use that which we already have in hand. We need to better use those assurance techniques that we do have. I've been working with them for 30 years, others before that. In safety and reliability arenas, we can produce reliable, safe devices. The security market needs to step up to those standards. We need to continue research and development efforts to improve them and find others. Let's have a show of hands. How many of you here are involved with companies or activities that develop or market security products to users? Let's see the hands. How many of you, not on the attack side, but on the development side? Look around. I'm talking to you. Do your jobs better. Please. We had a talk in the kickoff by Roush yesterday stating that he wanted to go after the hackers and make it more painful for them in order to keep them out of the way and drop the noise level. That may or may not be appropriate, but if we made them better, it wouldn't be so attractive for them to play. That also solves the hacker problem, not yet the nation threat. But the fact that hackers can get in is an abysmal statement about the state of assurance and proper systems engineering and products today. It's pathetic. It's time for a more precise definition of assurance. Assurances are confidence-building activities demonstrating that system functions meet the desired set of properties and only those properties, that the functions are implemented correctly, and the assurances hold up through manufacturing, delivery, and life cycle of the system. Pardon me, this slide is in here. I was going to talk about it, but that's been addressed by other speakers already. This catches up on the slides. Assurance activities differ during manufacture, delivery, and the life cycle. Okay. Assurance is provided through structured design processes, documentation, and testing, with greater assurance coming through more extensive processes, documentation, and testing. All this does lead to increased cost and delayed time to market, but it can be managed. But it is a severe 1-2 punch in today's marketplace. Several examples of assurance techniques come to mind. I'll briefly discuss some in each of the following six areas: operating systems, software modules, meaning applications, hardware features, systems engineering, where I think the best bang for the buck will be, third-party testing, and legal constraints. Let's talk about operating systems. Operating systems, even if not truly secure, they can at least remain benign, not actively malicious, turned against you, if they would simply enforce a digital signature check on every critical module prior to each execution. We have done such a prototype test with the Solaris system. It costs less than 2-3% overhead to have every OS module digitally signature checked prior to execution. And it makes it very difficult to replace them and gain advantage with malicious code when you do that. They should be self-protective and enforce least privilege. Type enforcement, process isolation, pick your favorite buzz phrase. They should be aware of and enforce security policies. That's something very important. Most people dive right and says, make me secure, but they never define what they mean by it. That's your policy. What you actually want to protect, what does not need protection. This could be a whole talk in itself, stressing security policies. I'll merely give you an interesting quote. Recall that policy drives requirements, and Robert Morris Sr., the father of the famous worm author along the way, stated, systems built without requirements cannot fail. They merely offer surprises, usually unpleasant. Okay? So I find that an interesting characterization of systems built without requirements, and requirements come from the policy. Without a policy, you cannot come up with valid requirements. It all ties together. Operating system security is the basis for secure systems. You won't get there without it. This area is so important that it needs all the emphasis it can get. It is the current black hole of security. If we talk about software modules, who wants a free cell phone? They said it would interrupt a speaker. It surely did. Okay. Software modules should be well documented, written in certified development environments. That's one of the big kickers. You really do need to have a certified development environment. That means a process that you use for quality control. You've got the SEI CMM level 5. You have the ISO 9000. There are other processes out there. I don't care which one you use. Get one. Use it. Improve the process you use to develop your software. It's very important. You need to test at their interfaces for boundary condition behavior, which is a typical thing, invalid outputs, and something not often done, proper commands given in an improper sequence. Often that will bust things wide open for you. Formal methods or other techniques should be used to assure that modules meet their specifications exactly, with no extraneous or unexpected behaviors, especially embedded malicious behavior. When we talk about hardware, running a little bit ahead there, the use of smart cards, smart badges, or other hardware tokens should be considered for especially critical functions. Although it costs more than software, when properly implemented, the assurance gain is great. There was a good talk yesterday by the at-stake people on proper hardware engineering technology. It was a good presentation. The form factor is not as important as the existence of an isolated processor and address space for assured operations. If you will, it's an island of security. The area where I think the biggest bang for the buck will be gained, however, is in systems engineering. And primarily, what I want to talk about in this is a special flavor of the question, how to get high assurance in commercial gear. There are two ways to talk about this. How can we trust? Or, if we cannot trust, how can we safely use security gear of unknown surety? Note the difference in the two characterizations above. How can we trust? Or, if we cannot trust, how can I safely use? How you phrase the question may be important. For my money, I think we need more focus on how to safely use security gear of unknown provenance. I don't have a complete answer on how to handle components of unknown surety, but my thoughts lean toward systems engineering approaches, somewhat akin to what the banking industry does in their systems. No single component, module, or person knows enough about the overall transaction processing system to be able to mount a successful attack at any one given access point. To be successful, the enemy must have access at multiple points and lots of system architectural data. An example of this would be the computation of interest on an account. The executive routine could take the user transaction record, the username, the user account number, his current balance, the amount of money to post interest on, and the interest rate. Send that whole transaction record to a subroutine which computes the rate, replaces the balance with the new balance. That's one approach. Another approach would be to have the executive routine reading the whole transaction record, extract the dollar amount that needs to have interest computed, extract the rate the user has been promised, pass those two parameters, amount and rate, to a subroutine to calculate the amount necessary to put in the account. It comes back as the return. The exec puts the amount in the transaction record. Notice there is less exposure to different modules, which might have been written by different teams, of all the user data. These are examples of partitioning it into modules with blinded interfaces and limited authority, where the data at any one interface is insufficient to develop a complete attack. Further, cooperating modules are designed to be mutually suspicious, auditing and alarming each other's improper behavior to the extent possible. In addition, to guard against unintended extra functionality without within given hardware modules or software routines, the development philosophy needs to enforce something akin to no-loan zones in that no designer or coder can present a black box or proprietary effort to the system design team, and then that is tested only at its interfaces and accepted. Wrong story. Wrong story. Many companies are multinational. If not multinational, they're not aware of the affinities of their employees, and any single employee might be on more than one payroll and doing things for more than one master in the efforts that he's doing for the primary owner of his activities. That needs to be mediated in some sense. All schematics and code need to be reviewed in detail, line by line, for quality and responsiveness to stated system requirement goals. This review is by parties independent of the designer. This is expensive, but it is not far from processes required in many quality software development environments today. Back to the SEI CMM Level 5, ISO 9000, you pick it. You can do these things. They have high-level systems today that can meet reliability and safety concerns. Security ought to get on the bandwagon and pick up some technology from those areas that already have viable tools. The open source movement may also provide value in this area. There are pluses and minuses with open source, but from the security viewpoint, I believe it is primarily a plus. Further architectural constraints may be imposed to make up for deficiencies in certain modules. Rather than, or in addition to, encryption and application processes prior to transmitting data to other sites, now this encryption process at the application level could be bypassed or countered by a malicious operating system. But you could also require site-to-site transmissions to go through an encrypting modem or another inline, non-bypassable link encryptor. Link encryption, in addition to application layer encryption, is an example of a layered defense strategy, which attempts to combine several weak or possibly flawed mechanisms in a fashion robust enough to provide protection at least somewhat stronger than the strongest component present. Synergy, you know what synergy is. That's where the strength is greater than the sum of the parts. It's highly desirable in systems engineering, but it's not likely as an outcome. You must avoid at all costs the all-too-common result where the system strength is less than the strength offered by the strongest component in the system. And in some worst cases, and I have seen them, believe me, you can have the system strength less than the weakest component present in the system. I call that anti-synergistic. There's other more obscene phrases that could be used to describe it as well. You've got some fairly good pieces, you plug them together, and you come up with real pfft, and it just doesn't function at all. I've seen that as well. Security is so very fragile under composition. This area of the safe use of inadequate components is one of our hardest problems, but it's an area where I expect some of the greatest payoff with only modest effort in the future, and where I invite you to spend effort. It'll get us fast to where we need to go, in addition to the use of formal methods and other more robust techniques within the modules themselves. Okay, let's talk a little bit about third-party testing. The National Institute for Science and Technology and the National Security Agency will provide third-party testing in something we call the National Information Assurance Partnership Laboratories, or the NIAP process. Now, you're going to hear more about that later today from another speaker, so I won't dwell on it today. But primarily, it is one of the many features under NIAP is paying commercial labs to do testing of security products. But it will only be successful if users see the need for something other than vendor claims of adequacy, or what I call proof by emphatic assertion. We've all seen it. Buy me, I'm good. Every salesman who earns his salt says that as soon as he walks into the customer's site. How can they pick? How can they judge? They cannot. Security is invisible at the interface in many cases, and you need to test for it, and it should be independent testing. If not by NIST or by other government mechanism, and many of you are very paranoid about government mechanism that could be valid, then the industry needs to provide third-party mediation for vendor security claims, either via consortia or other mechanisms, to provide independent verification of vendor claims in a way understandable by users. The final user or the accrediting authority has to understand what you're telling him. And finally, and sadly, what I think will be necessary is legal constraint. Lawsuits following up on selected Y2K fiascos or various virus attacks might help lead to legal fitness for use criteria for software products, much as other industries face today. This could be a big boon for assurance. Imagine liability for something other than the quality of the media on which a product is delivered. How many of you read that shrink-wrapped license that the only thing they guarantee or replace is that the media reads? All other bets are off. Absurd. Also, not as likely, but in my own fantasy in the legal arena, how many of you are aware of various laws in some states on attractive nuisances? In the northern states where snow falls, there's frequently a law stating, in a heavy snowfall, if you shovel your lawn, your sidewalk, but you do not do it adequately so that an ice glaze forms, someone can come walking along, step on your sidewalk, slip, break his leg, and he can sue you for providing an attractive nuisance. The fact that you shoveled was an implicit promise that the sidewalk was usable. If you wanted to avoid a lawsuit, don't shovel at all. Then there is no implied promise of adequacy of mechanism. But if you go out and shovel and somebody slips on your sidewalk, you're liable for providing an attractive nuisance. Okay? There are also entrapment laws. You can't make something look so seductive and so sexy that people just got to try it and run into it, even though it's illegal, and then they get arrested. I really think the state of security offered by our products today, in some sense, provides attractive nuisances or are forms of entrapment for the hackers. Shame on you. In closing, I reiterate that what we need most in the future is more assurance rather than more functions or features. The malicious environment in which security systems must function absolutely requires the use of strong assurance techniques. Most attacks today result from failures of assurance, not function. Rather than offer predictions, let's try for a self-fulfilling prophecy. Each of us here today should leave this conference with a stronger commitment to quality research and assurance techniques, with strong emphasis on transferring the technology to industry and from them to customers. As Schneier pointed out in his talk, it is not adequate to have the technique. It must be used. We have our work cut out for us. Let's go do it. Somewhat ironic, but I believe the government speaker has a few minutes left for questions, if there are any.
Does this work?
That's for later. Are there any questions? Over here, against the, near the water machine? Stand up and shout. Interesting question. I'll repeat it. I'll paraphrase it. Is the open source movement an attractive nuisance? Is that a correct characterization of the question?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know for sure. I'm not a lawyer. I don't pretend to be one. I would think not, but open source, as I said, it's not clear that it's a win, but it has a capability. Merely because something is open doesn't necessarily mean it's actually been looked at by anyone. But if you do have open source material that is actively reviewed, and it's fairly obvious by looking at the various mailing chat rooms and mail lists devoted to this, you can get an assessment, somewhat intuitive, of is there active effort against this or not? Is it a hot topic? Is it being played with, like some of the Linux stuff today? There are other things in the open source movement that are labeled as open because the guy put it out on the net and said, hey, look, this is my product, but nobody looks and nobody gives a damn. And therefore, it is not reviewed and doesn't have any quality behind it. I would have more faith and view it would be less attractive nuisance if there were a body of people, and there'd be a parallel, I think, in law to due diligence, that enough people were engaged and at least tried, that even if a vulnerability was found, if this were under active review, you'd probably be less liable than a guy who claims, I put it out, nobody found a flaw, therefore it's good. That could be a malicious claim if in fact there was no activity against it. So I don't see it as a yes or no answer. I think it depends on the level of activity. And I'm not a lawyer. Next question.
Look at the suggestion for
The question is that most of my suggestions for improving the situation of software tended to require centralized mechanisms, and why should the open source movement listen to that? I did not intend that in my presentation. If that impression was left, I apologize. That's not the case. You do need, I think, third-party independent. That doesn't mean only one party, and they are God. But somebody other than the creator himself must be willing to attest to the quality, and the open source movement does that. There are many out there whacking on it. In my mind, that fits the model to some extent. I'm a government bureaucrat. I apologize. There may have been bias in my language. It was not intended. Next question. Back there. Cannot hear you. Shout. I'm sorry. Come closer and shout. Or somebody up here who heard the question, shout for me. I think, if I can translate the question clearly, is do we need new languages that may have more robust features, automatic type enforcement, that sort of thing? C++ and others are wide open languages. They don't characterize things well. They lead to buffer overflow problems. If you're using that sort of stuff, you need other independent mechanisms or tools to go through and test. There are other languages. He named a couple. I could not hear the names. I'm sorry. But there are other languages out there that come equipped innately with tools for checking certain flaws. It's nice to use those, but I'm not going to try to bash C too much or other such languages, because those vulnerabilities in those languages can be addressed by proper process in the development environment with review. If instead you incorporate some of those functions in the language, that's fine too. Then you might not need independent review, but then you need attestation and proof that the language itself is adequate to provide the protection, and that requires review. So yeah, other languages would be helpful, but it's not a requirement. Process can go a long way. I appreciate the comment, but I don't believe it's related to any of my presentation whatsoever. That's fine. That's fine. Comments are fair as well as questions. He felt that the open software situation, since the developers were giving it away free, they could not afford to be held responsible for liability. Therefore, any effort to bring law forth to hold open source liable would be foolhardy. Is that a fair characterization? Okay. That's his comment, not mine. I have no position. I am intrigued by the open source movement. I don't know yet if it can do enough to solve my problems. I am not myself worried about the legalisms. I know I should be, but I'm not. I'm worried about the actual improvement of the quality in the product itself. If open source can do that, I'm going to work very hard to find a way to use it. If it does not deliver that to me, then sorry, goodbye. I need better quality in my product, whether it's open or closed. I don't care. I need the quality and the safety for my customer. Next question. I think we're out of time. Thank you for your time.